The English Eccentric by E. O. Higgins.
In 1765, a distinguished French scholar by the name of Pierre-Jean Grosley visited England for the first time and was struck by the level of eccentricity he observed in the natives. Writing home on the subject, he noted that this unusual behaviour he had observed could be attributed to a mixture of fogs, beef, and beer, aggravated by the tedium of the English Sunday. The poet and critic Dame Edith Sitwell once famously declared, "I'm not eccentric, it's just that I'm more alive than most people. I am an unpopular electric eel set in a pond of catfish." Which is a, you know, slightly odd thing to say. The eccentrics we'll meet in this podcast series are often people with corkscrew minds, peculiar obsessions, and largely incomprehensible outlooks. They straddle both sexes and all social classes. Some of their stories are famous, but most are unjustifiably obscure. But hopefully, what they all are is worth a listen.
Sir George Reresby Sitwell, 1860-1943. Here comes the Eggman.
Sir George Reresby Sitwell's name has been largely overshadowed by the prominence of his three children, Edith, Osbert, and Sir Cheverel, who, during the early half of the 20th century, established themselves as writers of note. In her strongly titled book, English Eccentrics, 1933, Edith made only a passing reference to her father's eccentricity, but really, he deserved at least his own chapter. George Sitwell was just 2 years old when his father, Sir Sitwell Sitwell, died, and he inherited his baronetcy. As a child, he once proudly proclaimed to a stranger on a train,
"I am Sir George Sitwell, Baronet. I am 4 years old and the youngest baronet in England."
George's father's attempts to renovate the family estate of Renishaw Hall in Eckington in Derbyshire threw him into huge debts and forced the family to flee the building to escape his creditors. Consequently, the young George was brought up in Scarborough, where his mother, the Dowager Lady Louisa, had a house. In 1885, the 25-year-old Sir George became the MP for Scarborough and a year later married the 17-year-old society beauty, Lady Ida Denison. It was not necessarily the happiest union. Indeed, 3 days after the wedding ceremony, Lady Ida fled back to the home of her parents. She was instructed to return to her husband forthwith, and from then on seemed to settle into married life, dividing her time between her two interests of drinking champagne and spending her father's cash. Sir George successfully managed to reacquire Renishaw Hall, his family's seat, with no small help from his wife's family's money. And any visitors were greeted by a sign nailed to the front door by Sir George, reading,
"I must ask anyone entering the house never to contradict me in any way, as it interferes with the functioning of my gastric juices and prevents me from sleeping at night."
An insular man who was able to indulge his interests unchecked, Sir George had several peculiar hobbies and was a prolific writer, even though he apparently believed that writing was bad for a person's physical well-being. When Osbert Sitwell informed him he had started writing a book, he was advised by his father,
"You had better drop that idea at once. My cousin had a friend who utterly ruined his health writing a novel."
When Edith subsequently informed him of her literary ambitions, he told her to take up gymnastics instead, explaining,
"There's nothing a man likes so much as a girl who's good on the parallel bars."
Regardless of this, Sir George had 7 studies in Renishaw Hall, festooned with books, papers and notepads, in which he occupied himself writing on a plethora of slightly maddeningly niche subjects, including the Black Death at Rotherham, the history of the cold, the use of the bed, and the history of the fork. Other works in progress had such provocative titles as Wool Gathering in the Medieval Times and Since, Domestic Manners in Sheffield in the Year 1250, Acorns as an Article of the Medieval Diet, and, of course, Leper's Squints. Why none of his children ever pointed out the clear discrepancy between his apparent beliefs in the harmful ramifications of writing and his own literary output is unknown. It must only be assumed they didn't want to upset his gastric juices. Despite his remarkable number of literary projects, only one of Sir George's books ever found a publisher. This was On the Making of Gardens, 1909. Though the book is a testament to Sir George's interest in horticulture and landscaping, it cannot really be said to be a practical guide. Indeed, Sitwell's gardening wisdom includes such helpful advice as:
"The great secret of success in garden making is that we should abandon the struggle to make nature beautiful round the house and should rather move the house to where the nature is beautiful."
Sitwell had studied garden design in Italy in his youth, and in later life it became one of his major preoccupations. In the same year he had his gardening book published, he purchased the 10th century Castello di Monte Goffoni near Florence, an ancient tumble-down castle that was inhabited by more than 300 local people from the peasant community, whom, naturally enough, he had his work cut out convincing to leave. Over a period of many years, Sir George renovated the castle and would occupy it for part of the year. When he returned home, he would continually make improvements to the garden around Renishaw Hall, at one time employing more than 4,000 men to dig him an artificial lake on the grounds. However, his improvements didn't stop there. To enhance the view from one of his windows, he had Chinese willow patterns painted on the cows that grazed nearby. It seems his projects were not confined to his own homes either. Making an unexpected visit to his son Sir Cheverell's house in 1942, he surveyed the grounds and declared,
"I don't propose to do much here, just a sheet of water and a line of statues."
Sir George was also something of an inventor, though not an especially successful one. One of his major breakthroughs was the musical toothbrush. Buying a normal toothbrush, Sir George built into it a small music box so that it played the traditional Scottish love song, Annie Laurie, whilst he cleaned his teeth. To improve alfresco eating in his garden, Sir George went on to produce a tiny, low-calibre handgun, which he had created specifically for shooting wasps. Labouring tirelessly in his workshop, Sir George spent months developing a method of making knife handles from condensed milk. Though he thought this would change the world, he was famously brought back to earth by an inquiry from Henry Mote, the family butler, who asked,
"And what shall I do if the cat gets it, sir?"
Arguably Sir George's most celebrated terrible invention was the Sitwell egg, a ball of smoked meat encased in white rice and a synthetic shell. He thought it would be a huge hit with tourers and explorers, as it would never go off, even though it clearly would. It didn't matter if you were alpine mountaineering or searching for the source of the Nile. Wherever you were on the globe, you could go to work on a Sitwell egg. All you'd have to do is boil it for a few minutes, and you'd have a tasty and nutritious meal. Brimming with confidence, one day Sir George even appeared unannounced at the office of Gordon Selfridge, the founder of the famous Oxford Street department store, to whom he urgently declared,
"I am George Sitwell, and I have my egg with me."
Selfridge apparently invited him in to pitch the Sitwell egg, but ultimately decided against adding it as a new product line. the short-sighted fool. Despite his mercurial and imaginative mind, Sir George was often confused by the conventions of modern life. On one occasion, when asked to pay Sir Cheverel's Eton school fees, he endeavoured to do so with pigs and potatoes. His method for calculating what Osbert's allowance should be was based on what a Sitwell forebear had given his eldest son during the plague years. Sir George travelled extensively around Europe, always accompanied by Henry Moat, his butler, and an enormous collection of medication, which he deliberately mislabeled to stop other people using. Unlike his father and wife, Sir George had a naturally thrifty nature, and when out exploring the world to save cash, he and Moat would often sleep on the streets or even doss down in dormitories with homeless people. Yet, conversely, there were some standards he simply refused to let slide. He would dine on a roast chicken every day, and, regardless of whether he happened to be in a Salvation Army spike or amongst a group of Italian peasant folk, he would dutifully don full evening wear so that he was correctly dressed for dinner. Sir George's side projects meant he typically had very little time for his wife and family. And, left entirely to her own devices, Lady Ida's behaviour grew ever more erratic. Her father, William Henry Forrester Denison, styled as the Lord Londesborough, and the first president of the British Goat Society, was an influential banker who had amassed a vast pile of money in the city and would give his daughter anything she wanted. In fact, Lord Londesborough would pretty much give money to anyone around him on the understanding that they left him in peace. His servants were all provided with checkbooks so they could withdraw cash from his account without ever having to pester him. Consequently, Lady Ida grew up with no real understanding of money and became a remarkable spendthrift. Trapped in an unhappy marriage to George, she spent her days tottering around Renishaw Hall, quaffing champagne and squandering money on pointless tat. This included spending the equivalent of several thousand pounds on a hangman's rope, which she attached to her bedhead as a lucky charm, and lavishing a small fortune on a psychic pig. In The Scarlet Tree, 1946, Oswald Sitwell wrote of his mother's overspending.
I do not know how long my father and mother had been married before he realized the extravagance of her nature. Perhaps the episode of the learned pig may have put him wise to it. A few months after her marriage, when she was not yet 18, she had been asked to open a conservative bazaar in Scarborough. There she had seen an animal known as the learned pig, which told fortunes, and she had been greatly impressed by its uncanny knowledge of character and grasp of the future. I am not sure by what method, whether by horoscope, tea leaves, palmistry, clairvoyance, or rapping on the tables with its cloven hoof, the creature made its prognostications, but my mother had been unable to resist bidding on the remarkable creature when it was offered at auction at the end of the bazaar. Sure enough, she obtained it, but for a very considerable amount of money. This was bad enough, but once the erudite porker was in her hands, its psychic gifts completely deserted it.
Later in life, Lady Ida's fondness for drinking and gambling resulted in her being targeted by a gang of criminal moneylenders. Her attempts to extradite herself from their grip finally culminating in her being handed a 3-month prison sentence. Sir George refused to bail her out, much to the disgust of his children. In an effort to avoid their father, the Sitwell children invented a mythical steamer, the Rover, and they would pretend to be away on around-the-world trips for extended periods. They even went so far as having headed notepaper from a fictional shipping line printed up, on which they would send notes claiming that the ship's itinerary had not yet been finalised, so that they could not provide a forwarding address, all the while living in London. Of her childhood at Renishaw Hall, Edith Sitwell wrote, "I was unpopular with my parents from the moment of my birth and throughout my childhood and youth." She claimed that she was ignored by her father, bullied by her mother, and forced to wear a back brace and nose truss to correct her profile and physique. Despite his three children's success in becoming much revered literary and artistic figures in London, Sir George always claimed that they were a disappointment to him, and he would spend time telling them as much whenever they met. It can only be deduced that, much like his famous invention, Sitwell was not exactly a good egg. Still, the wasp gun is pretty inspired.
Next on the English Eccentric.
The Hellraiser.